Shalom, welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co. or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we always ask you to stay tuned until the end of the program. We're going to ask you to share this, but also give you a really great incentive for doing so. I'm excited to introduce you to a friend of mine who's been behind the camera on many things that you've seen relating to the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, but never in front of it. Oriel Moran, and I'm saying it with my American accent, Oriel Moran in Hebrew, is a writer, a content creator, and she does, and content means a lot of things, but she does some great video. And I have, we met, goodness, a couple of years ago. It's not that long, but it feels like we've known each other really quite a while. And we weren't really sure. I remember that first time we had coffee together. We just connected. We didn't really know why, but it's developed not just into a lovely friendship, but also something that I've truly valued professionally, because I think all of our videos, Oriel, you've done, and or maybe not all, but gee, most of them. And I get great compliments, and people love it, and people who are very picky about stuff. So I'm excited to have you. And this conversation that we're having today came up just from the context of other conversations that we've had now for, well, a number of weeks, because you know that I take people and groups down to the Gaza border area. And you've always said, hey, I want to go. Hey, I want to go. Hey, I want to go. And about 2 weeks ago, the hey, I want to go was realized, and you came down. We had a lovely group, people. A journalist from the UK, four women from Germany, me driving a really big rental van, and we had a very, very full day. And when I follow you, and let's give also a plug that you should be followed. People who want to know what's going on here in Israel at YouTube, Oriel in Israel, yes?
Yes, Oriel in Israel.
Okay, and we'll put that in the show in the link here in the show notes so people can follow. But I always love how you capture not just the expression of what you do, but you capture. You've got a great eye, and therefore you're able to depict things to people that may be even mundane, but you make it into something meaningful. And so it was special for me to be able to squeeze you into the van that day, but also to see you. See through your eye how you were experiencing that day. So I'm really glad that we're doing this both. And by the way, I want to say Inspiration from Zion is both a podcast. So if you're following the podcast and hearing the audio, great. But there's going to be a lot of video that you're going to want to follow here. And in which case, I also want to encourage you to follow where we're streaming it for the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation at our YouTube channel. Welcome, Oriel. It's nice to have you in front of the camera.
Thank you. You know what? The thing about doing live Zoom interviews is that your cat suddenly decides to go berserk. So I was on mute this whole time because I had to let him out. I'm so sorry.
Okay. All right. So I will. They do this in media. I will stream it. We're gonna let the cat out and then talk about. Yeah. Ta-da.
I'm back.
It's the cat and not a crying baby. You can't put crying babies out the window or door or whatever.
Yeah, reminds me of those funny behind the scene clips of people on the news and the baby comes in and the dog is barking. So a bit of humor for us, but
what were you anticipating that day as we met up going to the South? First of all, I mean, you're an Israeli. You've lived in Israel much of your life, a lot. And you've been in the U.S. and traveled, but was this your first time down in the Gaza border area?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just writing an article about it now and trying to get my thoughts out about it because I actually my first real like encounter with Gaza, like firsthand, wasn't from me being there, but it was from my sister, who was a Tzpitanit, so like a
Oh, whoa.
observer, and she would tell me all about like the things that they would see on the camera and the terrorists that would come to the border, and I didn't have like a it always felt to me like a place far away, you know, like somewhere else. And even though it's, you know, not too far away from where I'm actually at, it just felt very far removed. And then the 7th of October comes around and you realize that it's here, you know, that the rockets that are flying and the terrorists that came in, they're not that far away from you in actuality. And I was very, I don't know if you would call it a morbid curiosity, but I really wanted to see where the things happened, where the massacres happened, and what the Gaza border actually looks like, because I felt too disconnected because I'm seeing all these images of the south of Israel, of all the atrocities, of the terrorists, and I didn't want it to feel even further removed because of trauma. Because when you are encountered with such horrible things, your brain, to defend itself, it wants to just remove it. And I was afraid to disassociate too much of it. And so I was looking for an opportunity to really actually go there and see the things. And I kept asking you, and you know, like, if you go and you have a space for me, I want to come with you. And that day we had an opportunity to the game.
What now? I didn't know about your sister, and when you said it, my response was very spontaneous because just this past week, as we're having the conversation, there was video released all over national TV and media here, with the GoPro self footage from the Hamas terrorists on October 7th, about 3 4 minutes of them capturing one of the bases where these observers are, which are typically young women, and sh not sh they, there's one place where you see a body that's blurred out, but they're five young women soldiers in their pajamas because it was 6:30 in the morning, and two or three of them are very bloodied, and then they're all let out. Was that any? We've known that this was the case, and these soldiers, many of them have were saying something's happening for some weeks with training and what have you. But did that connect you to this, I hate to say story, but to what happened because your sister served in that position?
I mean, it certainly gives you a more inside look as to how the observer said that they didn't feel like anyone took them seriously, because apparently they had been warning and saying all these things. And I think knowing what a vulnerable position that is to be a woman in the army, you're entrusted to keep a border safe, and then not only to not feel like someone is actually trusting you, but then to be sort of feel abandoned. And literally being Gaza after that, I think there's a lot of hurt for people in this regard, a lot.
And it makes it, yeah, it makes it, I think this week was very pivotal with the release of that film. They're 18, 19. Well, I want to talk about age because you had a very powerful observation later in the day when we were down there together, but 18, 19-year-olds who were there, entrusted with tremendous responsibility, now, as all of our soldiers are. As we drove down, we spent a lot of time. We were supposed to get into one of the Gaza border communities that had been overrun by terrorists that day. The day, I don't know still today what happened, but for whatever security reason, we were not able to go. You know what? And it's important for anyone following. We went 2 weeks ago at the beginning of May. It was a day. It was exactly 7 months after the October 7th attack and massacre. And the point of noting this is we were going to go into a community called Nativ HaAsara, which is smack on the northern border of Gaza, which was supposedly cleared out from terrorists. And 7 months later, something was going on in northern Gaza that made us unable to go into that community. Still going on. What was there any anxiety? What did you anticipate as we were in the car for about an hour and a half together?
You know, I didn't know what really to think because it's one thing to see videos and photos and everything and, you know, living in Jerusalem or near Jerusalem. At some point, the war sort of, it's the consciousness of the is it's always there, but it's nothing like actually going to the South, because when we got there, it felt like time had frozen. It felt like the 7th of October just was one long continuous 7 month day, and there's army presence all around everywhere you go, and it's everywhere you go also, like on either on foot or in the car, something happened there. And the most famous
Yes.
video clips that we in the beginning saw, everyone in their different places in the country, suddenly you're actually standing there, but you don't actually know until someone tells you the story that right where you're standing, something happened. And I think that's what was shocking to me, because everywhere you look, there's no way for you to forget it, because 700 meters from you know, 1 kilometer from you, however farther the distance is from you, Gaza is there. And I think that's where the disconnect happened for me when I wasn't in the South. And then when I came to the South, it's as if everything just like you just zoomed in really close to my face so that I could see it in front of my eyes. And I think honestly, till the end of the evening, I don't think that I was able to process truly what I was seeing, because we also saw a lot, but it was so horrific that I don't think the heart can really understand it on the spot.
What are the top? We're gonna take a minute and watch your video together because it is so good. It was so compelling. But what are the three takeaways that everyone, if someone's only paying attention for the first 10 minutes of this conversation, what are the three takeaways that someone needs to know from that?
It's a really good question. I think that if you're looking for evil, you can find it. But if you're looking for kindness, it's much more precious.
Wow.
And I'll explain it in a way that when you are encountered with evil, there's a temptation to think that the whole world is like that and no one is kind. But for all of the horrific stories that can be told, there's also heroes that you can find. And those heroes sacrificed themselves. They saved other people on the way to save loved ones and couldn't get to their loved ones on time, and their loved one didn't even make it, but they saved strangers. And so if you want to look evil in the eyes, you have to do it in the light of also kindness, because there's two sides to every story, or two perspectives, if you will. The other one is, I think, just how fragile life is. I, as a 33-year-old, I've gone through, hopefully I'll live for many more years, but you just think of what you've done with your life so far, and you think, that could have been me. I could have been one of those people at a party, or they're visiting family or friends at a kibbutz, and
Yeah.
I have not been here. And it causes you to think, what have I been doing with my life? And then the third thing is, I think that you have to decide to remember despite how much it hurts. And like I said before, human nature wants to take the traumatic things of life and to push them aside. But for me, going there, I did it intentionally, because I wanted the memory of those people to be alive in my heart, because I knew that it would give me a deep understanding to serve others. And so, if you are curious as to what is happening in Israel, in Gaza, do it with the intention of the love in your heart guiding you within that journey, because without it, you're going to get lost,
Yeah.
because you can't go through that journey without having some kind of mission.
And then and the corollary to that, if you don't, then it becomes a little bit more like voyeurism, like going to see something that is lurid, that it's like looking through a neighbor's window, but in an obscene
Right.
way, and not understanding that you're bearing witness, not fulfilling a personal need or gratification.
Right.
Wow, you know what? Thank you for saying my question was good, but your answers were better considering I didn't prep you at all for that. And none of this is scripted. We're just going to go through it. We st and I don't remember, so just in case it's not in the beginning of your video, we started out with I'm with maybe won't say his name, but a soldier who I've been working with, and people who've been donating to the Genesis 123 Foundation emergency camp Israel emergency campaign. We've been providing resources for the well-being and safety of soldiers through this person and who guided us that day. And I remember in some cases you deliberately didn't include his face because he prefers not to be on camera so much. But we stopped at a roadside gas station where there's these things pop up in the southern Gaza, in the Gaza area, where soldiers can go in and get a hot meal, drink, sit and play cards, rest, unwind on their way to or from the front. Did you it, was that included? I don't remember. Oh, sure it was, because of course I saw.
Yeah.
So you know what? Do we want to start? Let's take a look, and I'll interrupt and cut it off. And I want to invite you, Ariel, also. If there's something that you want to stop the video and expand upon, let's do that.
No problem. So what we're going to do now, just to give a little bit of a background, I'm going to show it to you guys on the screen, and then we're going to stop, talk about it, and see what comes up in our
Yeah.
conversation.
As remarkable and miraculous as Israel is, and its very existence a testimony to God's faithfulness, in many ways, Israel's like most other countries. Just as there are parents anywhere who have stronger and weaker parenting abilities, and adults become a product of situations in their lives that they cannot control, making their ability to raise and care for their own children even harder, that's true in Israel as well. The Genesis 123 Foundation is committed and takes the mandate seriously to care for the least of these, our brothers, our children. We're committed to bless and strengthen orphans and at-risk youth, to invest in them, to empower them, so that their future will be brighter than their past or their present. But Israel is unique in that there are always threats of war and terror which know no bounds. For children who come from homes that are not safe, sometimes the very scary reality of living in a community that's not safe is too much to bear. We are committed to turning orphans and at-risk youth into children of promise. We fund a variety of programs to help those most in need as widely as we can. We invite and encourage you to join us today so that we can ensure their brighter tomorrow. Please visit genesis123.co to find out more and to send your love and most generous donation today.
We basically just hopped between different locations in which things happen. So what you'll see is one of them is a protective shelter. Another one is a we'll just call it a junkyard graveyard for cars of those that have fallen from the October 7th. Another place that we went to, gosh, I feel like there's so many places. We went to the Nova Festival in Re'im. And probably when you guys see all of this footage, you'll see also just snippets of things like famous video clips that you've seen, but actually going there yourself, it's very eye-opening because you realize just how like just say at the festival in Re'im, you realize how vast and how big the field was that they were running through right when they realized that there were terrorists there, and how big it is and how much there was nowhere to hide. And I think that was one of the things that I was actually shocked about, because I thought, like, I mean, they're in a forest. There's so many places that you can hide. And yet it wasn't one of those like dense forests that you could climb a tree and hide here and hide there. It's just vast, vast fields, trees that are very thin and really nowhere to hide. And so it was really it was a really curious thing to see, because it also, I think, makes it hard when you're hiding in random places, like in holes and fields and things like this, for IDF to also find, because as much as you need to be found by the IDF, by police, you're also simultaneously hiding from Hamas. So that was what
And
about.
terrified, and
Yeah.
complete, because nobody that we didn't we now know several months later what happened, but people didn't know what was happening globally around them.
True. And also, like, another thing that might be a really bad added, equation to it is that a lot of people that go to these, parties, they get high, they they smoke a joint or they even do more, stronger substances than that. And you think to yourself, what were they feeling? Like if they had it too much to drink, like not only that, but you're in this paranoia and you don't know where you are. You suddenly have to run really, really fast for your life, and you're just in this hellish nightmare. And so it's things like that that when you're in the moment, you think, wait a second, if I was in this party, in what state would I be when I'm running away? If you're not entirely sober or if you're a bit high, it's terrifying. We were traveling with a group of Germans and an American and I think a British journalist that was working living in Bethlehem. And going with non-Israelis was actually interesting because they're actually seeing a lot of Israel for the first time. So
Correct.
it's also like not just seeing Israel for the first time, but the initial shock of what is a migunit, like why do you have to have protective shelters in random places like bus stations and fields and stuff like that. So I thought that that was also from an Israeli perspective, seeing foreigners react for the first time was also very interesting.
I definitely, you're well, while you that's an excellent comment. And while I am still trying to figure this out, and thinking, goodness, I should have definitely had this queued up to do properly. Share sound. Here we go.
We made it.
Before I click on play. So what did you take? Well, you know what? We'll come back to that. We'll talk about what did you took away from the Germans who were visiting. But let's hear. Let's watch first. There we go.
Today. Behind me is a sort of tent for soldiers, so it's like a refreshing station where they can come to this place. People bring sandwiches and free food. As you can see, there's a lot of different army vehicles and stuff like this, but people basically bring food for the soldiers, and they can come and sit there in the tent and eat and drink, and it really serves them well because a lot of them are on their way to their bases. It's a really cool place. Also, the fact that people volunteer and they bring all this food for free really shows, I think, the Israeli spirit, because since the war, people have been doing this. I think it gives them a little bit of a rest.
A little bit of background, every place that the Gazans knew, every place that served them was attacked first.
Explain to you guys where we're at. We stopped on the side of the road at what is called a migunit. So what a migunit is, it's basically like a small bomb shelter, if you will. And it's not like a bomb shelter that has a door, but it's a public one. This is really annoying. So my heart is beating. So what you see behind me these are all bullets, they're bullets or shrapnel from grenades.
Want to stop it, because I have tears in my eyes watching that again. You were that was also not scripted, nothing prepared for. For people listening to the audio, the few seconds of silence, which felt like minutes, was because it was so emotional for you. How does it make you feel looking at that again?
You know, I walked into it blindly because I really was convinced that he was just showing them what a Migunit is.
Oh,
Literally,
know
I
that.
and I was so focused on filming that, you know, once you have like a quote unquote job to do, you just sort of walk into it. And when I realized what I was walking into, everything froze. You know, you can't really. This is actually like the I've not been able to cry since the war so much. Like it comes like for like 1 second, and then somehow it just goes back in. And I think that being there, it really did open what I was hoping would be like a release of the dam in my heart that just wouldn't allow the emotions to come, because there's a part of you that just can't accept that humanity can be that evil and so cruel. And yet to honor their memory, you have to feel. You have to feel, and you have to tell their story just as it is. And just being there and seeing also like just the amount of candles, like how many people go in there to have some kind of comfort that, you know, they couldn't save their child while they were there, but at least they could be close to them, or as close as they can be to their last moments. And what a horrible place it is to have to remember your child or your friend, you know?
And when you see the bullet holes, and there are, and again, anyone, I really want to encourage people to go to the video and watch it, because I don't share often the video, maybe some stills, but the amount of bullets, and we didn't go into any of the communities that were devastated, but you see that gross inhumanity. Shooting and shooting and shooting, and you're only seeing the only thing we're seeing is the bullet holes in the walls of the shelter. We're not seeing the bullet holes that riddled the bodies. I want to point out, just so people understand, that we literally pulled, we made a right turn coming from Sderot on Route 34, heading south toward with the Gaza border along our right side, and our guests, our hosts, rather, there that day pulled us over and just went in there. It's on a street corner. It's on the corner of two highways. It's not in a populated area. And the important thing that people need to know is that these that are placed for as bomb shelters, because you're so close to the Gaza border, when rockets and still rockets are coming from Gaza, when you have an air raid siren, you have all of 15 seconds. So you need to place these pretty close together in populated and in non-populated areas. And this, which was meant to protect people, became a death trap. Let's keep watching.
Pictures of their loved ones who have died. They write things on the
home to commemorate. The crazy thing is also the fact that since then there have been sirens and people still have to run into this place, and this place still speaks of the death that happened quite literally here. I mean, literally right where I am standing. That's a grenade right over here. That's a grenade. And just to think that human beings could be so cruel, it's just unbelievable.
Listening, this is now where 1,600 vehicles, it's there in your notes, are the remains of 1,600 vehicles that were piled up.
Now I'm at the, I don't really have words today, guys. I'm at the site where they collected all of the burnt cars that Hamas, basically they lit them on fire. With people in them. You guys have probably seen or not seen. Some of the bodies were so burnt and so unrecognizable that for months or weeks they couldn't recognize them. And they were, bodies were melted together. That's how burnt they were. And so this is like a huge graveyard. What we're gonna see here is piles of burnt cars and normal cars that have been riveted with bullet holes, but there's no one to claim them. There's no one to claim these cars because they're gone, these people. And I'm just gonna let the footage speak for itself.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds. Just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones. I know I shouldn't be talking about video editing, but you did such a great job including camera footage of what actually happened that day.
Thank you.
Thank you. For those looking at the video, just stop in here and go back a second. So for those looking at the video, the sticker, white sticker with blue writing, is a notification that someone was killed in the vehicle. And we don't see that on the burnt cars that are piled up, but in the rows and rows of cars that weren't all incinerated, they're on most of them.
Myself just sort of nodding my head like it's so unbelievable, and yet you see it in front of your eyes, and I can sort of understand why people will look at the situation and be like, no, that can't be, people can't be that cruel, and yet they are. Sometimes I think we have too much faith in humanity, and then humanity comes and fails you, and it's too unbelievable and it's too stark of a reality that you just don't want to believe it. And so I understand why people become deniers of, you know, these types of atrocities, but when you see it right in front of your eyes, this is exactly what you're trying to avoid, and yet it's staring you in the face, and you can't go anywhere. You can't ignore it.
We'll just pause for a minute. I wanted to, among the things that I appreciate about you is you're very philosophical, and those comments, again, that was just raw emotion of you speaking very naturally. I don't know if we talked about it that day, but when I go to that car graveyard and I see all of the cars piled on top of one another, it takes me to images of the Holocaust, of Auschwitz and concentration camps, where the bunks were built three high, and sometimes you would see them packed where there wasn't room for more human beings. And this just goes up 5, 6, 7, 10 cars on a pile going on for 100 yards. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now we went to Sderot. Sderot is the largest city, 35,000 or so, right along the Gaza border. I'm remembering this as we visited the first time, but we're going to see a friend of mine who was an ambulance driver that day. Anything you want to add to set it up?
Well, I'll just say about before what we saw, it's interesting because once you put something like this on YouTube, then you get comments from anyone, from anywhere. And it's just, I find it so shocking that people still can't, they don't want to believe that it's true, not because it's, like I said, that it was unbelievable because it's shocking to the heart, but more because they just believe it's propaganda. And I think that it's one of those things that it doesn't matter for some people how much you show them and you go there and you say these are actual real people. Like one of the clips there that was shown of a terrorist kneeling on the road and shooting an RPG at one of the cars. I actually made a fundraise video for his son that they were trying to design a new room for him because he had lost his father. That is a real kid with a firefighter father who is, by the way, a friend of your friend who we're going to see right now. He mentioned him while we were talking. True. And that kid is a real kid that doesn't have a father anymore that you just created a video for. And people will still say that it's propaganda. But these are real people with real lives that are affected. And that, you know, coming out of that, you know, for however many weeks we've been away from it, that is what's more shocking than anything, that people refuse to believe.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Let's visit and stay wrote now.
Mm-hmm. And when everyone says that only shrapnels fell from the sky and everything is okay, that's a shrapnel. So you understand that living in the world is not just keeping ourselves safe from the rockets of the Hamas. It's living in times that when a child just walks over there, he needs to understand where's the closest shelter, where can he hide if there is a red color alert. They didn't even understood that there are terrorists already in the room. The Swiss family is a family of four, was a family of four. The father, Dolev, and the mother, Odaya. They had two children, two daughters. Romy was 6 years old, and Leah was 3 years old. When they heard the sirens, they decided to go to their grandparents in the Hobart. When they got to this roundabout, there was another siren. They didn't even witness the
actual footage from that day.
They are already in the roundabout. So Dolev took Romy, and Odaya took Leah. They ran to two different directions. Odaya ran to this construction site to hide, and Dolev ran to where you parked your car. There is a shelter next to it. At the last second, he didn't even saw it, but the terrorists were already over here. They just shot him. He lay down on Romy to protect her. They shot him again. They tried to make sure he is dead. And then they got back to the pickup truck and drove all the way to the police station. They had maps on them. About 60 terrorists got to Sderot and the junctions nearby. They did an ambush on all the main junctions, so all the forces who came to help shot from the ambush. They did 51 civilians and policemen died in Sderot at that day. 70 at the days afterwards. Dolev was severely injured over here. When the Romy, the little girl, got up from the sidewalk, she tried to help him. She understood that he's probably dead. She got back to her car. You can see in the video, she's going back to her car. No one doesn't even understand what she's supposed to do. And when Odaya got out of the construction site, she didn't even understand where is Dolev. One of our policemen, Golima, came from the neighborhood, got to over here, saw Dolev, thought he was already dead. He was severely injured. And he told Odaya, drive after me to the safest place in Sderot, to the police station. What he didn't know, that the two pickup trucks with 26 terrorists were already in the police station. So Odaya tried to drive. She couldn't. She was probably stressed. So a worker from the construction site, a Bedouin worker, told her, sit next to me, I will drive you to the police station. I will drive after him. And then he drove away. Dolev was badly injured. When Odaya drove to the police station with the policeman over here, after she drove, he got up, he tried to get up. A civilian saw him, just got him inside his car and drove all the way to our station. The two pickup trucks got over here, took off their pickup trucks and started engaging in combat next towards the policemen who were inside. They, all the people, the policemen, the civilians who were all on the streets, they just shot him and killed them. When Odaya and the policeman who drove before her got over here, the policeman got to that corner and they shot him in his car, killed him. Odaya and the driver, Amar, the Bedouin driver, saw what's going on, tried to run.
I just want to pause here because I want people to see what it looked like on October 7th. We're hearing recount from Elor, who's a friend of mine who was an ambulance driver that day and saved many lives. Thank God he and his family were safe. But to the directly in front of the screen, we're looking at the police station, which, as he said, dozens of terrorists attacked and infiltrated. I'm sure that you have the video coming up of what remains or doesn't remain. Let's just look.
And they just got until right about the white bus, and the terrorist from that direction shot them. They got to the window and shot him again. They didn't shoot the kids. Why? I don't know. As a volunteer in Zaka, we saw what they did to kids all over the Gaza envelope. It's not because they are, I don't know, a center or something. They killed everyone over here. Kids, elderly, crippled people. For some reason, maybe they didn't saw them because they hid. My friend Aharon and another friend G got with all sort of people, policemen who were on vacation, a soldier who was on vacation, firefighters, everyone who had guns, who understood that they are terrorists, ran to over here to help. At that about 5 minutes, they succeeded in getting to the car and getting the kids out.
We're both nodding our heads. It's not, you know, like you're a father and a grandfather, and I'm sure when you hear the screams like that, it's just unbearable.
It's hard to speak. And I wanted to pause it now for two reasons. First of all, again, anyone listening and not, if you're listening, just stop and go to the YouTube Genesis 1-2-3 or Oriel and Israel and watch the whole video because it's in Hebrew and you're getting, there's subtitles in English. But what you're hearing is you're seeing and hearing the body cam of the policemen who were saving these two little girls and the six-year-old screaming, help us, making sure that she knew that they were somehow, as a six-year-old, she understood she needed to make sure that they were Israelis helping and that as compared to the terrorists who just killed her parents in front of her eyes. And and my oldest grandson is 5 and a half. And I just wonder, I mean, God forbid, how does a little child, 5, 6 years old, and I just heard another story of a child from a similar age, I'm trying to remember, to have that presence to be able to be so grown up at that time.
I mean, I think she became a grown up the moment that her parents died. That was it.
I don't know. Let's keep watching.
My friend, G, after they ran from taking the kids out, ran to this place, to this shelter. He stood next to him, and he started asking, he's from the SWAT, but he's a sniper on the SWAT. So he started asking, does anyone has a rifle? No one had a rifle. You can see that the sniper from the rooftop, the Hamas sniper, tried to shoot him. You can see on the wall all that gray that was bullet holes from the sniper. Suddenly, by a miracle, a soldier in vacation came for that beacon, ran to over him, and he was with the rifle. The only one so he told him, "Give me your rifle." So normally, I wouldn't give him. He was with the Shabbat's clothes. No, I don't know if he's a soldier. So the soldier told him, "I'm not giving you my rifle. I'm here to fight." For some reason, he took out the belt of the rifle in order to fix his shirt inside his pants. My friend G grabbed the rifle, stole his rifle, ran to over here. That's 20 meters with the sniper is shooting. Went over here, got to this place, got to the third floor, knocked on the door, said, "I'm from Israel." The 70-year-old person over here opened it. He asked him, "Where is your toilet?" He pointed to his toilet, he lowered down the seat, got up on the toilet, cut the window. You can see the net of the window is still cut. He cut the window, put out the rifle that he stole from the soldier and waited. About 5-10 seconds afterwards, the sniper lifted up his head in order to continue on killing people everywhere. One shot, he took it out. The other terrorist over there tried to throw a grenade on the policeman on the roof that was already injured. Second shot, took his hand out. He wasn't a threat anymore. They had a big flag of Hamas on the roof. They tried to lift up the flag as they are saying, we control the police station of Sderot. He was on the old place fighting against the terrorists for an hour and a half until more forces came. At the night, when the police chief understood that everyone that's alive inside are terrorists, and unfortunately all the policemen inside are already dead, he understood that trying to get the police station back can cause more deaths and more injuries. So we decided to take it out, a tank, an Israel tank. You need to understand, a tank inside of a city got inside of the road, stood where the green bus is standing, and fired about 10 rounds. But the station was armored because of living in the road. So a fire chopper shot another missile on the station until they buried the terrorist inside. Just a brief. The paintings are about a month afterwards. So him. Picked him up and he drove with them to Kfar Aza. He fought for about 10 hours over there until he died over there.
Do you see the whole site behind me? This was where the police station was. This is where it was, and now it's just a pile of dirt, nothing. It's been flattened out.
Listening to people sing Hatikva, Israel's national anthem. It's a memorial site, and every day I've been there, you can see it's set up from the video for some sort of ceremony. But every day I go, there's always Israelis and tourists. Now we're moving on to the next site.
These are the last fields that I was talking about before, where they were literally just...
Right. So we're driving now toward Re'im, the where the Nova Musical Festival was, and the videos we're looking at are people fleeing to their cars, which were all shut up and burnt, and the marks of which you still see on the roads and through the fields. And let's just let your video do the talking.
It's about a minute or something of me just walking through the 164 people right. That were murdered there.
These are pictures of the people who were murdered there, and on the periphery, there are pictures of about, I don't remember if it's 50 or 90 who were kidnapped from the Nova Music Festival. The bodies of at least two of whom were just recovered this week. I think you have her picture, one of them.
Yes, no,
right. No, but no, her body has not been recovered. I'm thinking about
Lilo.
Yes. And this is a three-sided, I think you do all sides, but that's a three-sided portrait of all of the pictures, and it goes on for 100, 200 yards in every direction, these pictures that the families have set up as memorials. It's hard to speak while you're there, it's hard to speak while you're watching this, but it's important that we see these beautiful faces as they were when they were alive, in the primes of their life, and remember them that way, not imagining the fear and the horror and how they ultimately died.
is bound to happen. So I am at, I'm in Re'im, where you have a memorial for the fallen of the Nova Festival, but it's all young people. It's all young people that came for a party. And it's so hard to look at the photos because you look them in the eyes and it's like, oh, that could have been me. Like, look, how old is she? That could have been me. That could have been me. All of these people could have been me. They're just young people that had their whole lives ahead of them and it was taken from them. And it's just insane to see all of these people. I'll put the number over here. And it's a memorial site for them. And so people create at the bottom of every single one of these pictures, they make a little garden for them. And they put these beautiful objects and candles to commemorate them. And I'm telling you, you come here and there's a sense of an odd peace because there's a lot of love here. And there's also a lot of pain. So if you guys remember to pray for the people who, these are their children, their sisters, their brothers, their aunts, their uncles, they'll never have them back again. So please pray for these people because all of Israel is grieving right now. And I think that this site really commemorates exactly what it is, that young life was just taken, stolen.
About almost a third, almost a quarter of the people who were killed that day were killed at the Nova Music Festival.
So I'm going to link some websites and some YouTube channels that you guys can look at about the Nova Festival. Testimonies from there. So I want you to imagine with me, as hard as this is, that in this place there was a party, a huge festival, and literally hundreds and hundreds of people come to this festival, and there's nowhere to run. Now, you think to yourself, what do you mean? This is like a sort of forest. And even when I was watching the footage, I'm like, couldn't they just, you know, ran and hid between behind a tree or something? And these trees are paper thin. They're not big trees. You can't climb them and hide. Really, you're just exposed. And so, I hate to say this, but I want you to imagine the things that happened here, because what happened is that Hamas infiltrated with guns and literally started hunting people and shooting them down and raping women and tying them to trees and leaving them there, legs spread and naked. And no matter where they ran, and they ran for hours. People ran for hours and hours and hours, and they were afraid to come out of their hiding spots. And a lot of the people from the Nova Festival, they were kidnapped and either killed in captivity in Gaza, or they're still there. But the amount of people that died is just insane. And they just ran for their lives here. And you think to yourself, this is such a peaceful place. Like, on a normal day, of course you would want to have your party here. You know what I mean? Like, you would want to have your party here. It's a really nice place. And this place will never be that again. It'll never be that again.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, The Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
So on the other side, they planted a tree for each one of the fallen. We have a holiday that's called Tu Bishvat, in which on that day you go and you plant greenery and trees. I think it shows the resilience of Israel, that we try to celebrate life as much as we can and honor our dead, and the fact that they lived life. I can't say that for our enemies. They're not life-loving people.
You know, as we're going to drive again now, the thought I had watching videos that you spliced is that we made videos of celebration of life, and the videos that the terrorists made was the horrific acts where they killed people.
So this is our last destination, but you guys will be shocked to know that I've actually never seen Gaza from like afar. I never have. And so this will be actually my first time. And if this is your first time, then I guess we're doing it together. So there actually, you can't see it so well, but you can see there's sort of like a,
that's basically the northeast corner of Gaza, right there. The road that goes down, you see a road that goes down that direction, and then it curves back up behind this hill that has the fence and communication equipment. This is the northeast corner of Gaza, where we were supposed to have gone. And you can see the sea, and as the sun goes down, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, there's a ship you can see out in the sea.
That you can see in front of you, some 700 meters away. To identify the location.
Yeah, this is always emotional for me because it's the site of a battle where one of my daughter's friends was killed 10 years ago.
After the kidnapping of three Israeli teenagers.
When I realized that for the first time and I went there, very hard to continue. Somehow a beautiful sunset still doesn't pasteurize everything.
Gaza's right behind me. It's already sort of late, so the sun did go down. But you can hear the artillery, however you call it, going. And it's very surreal being in front of Gaza because I am relatively far away. You know, you have this, you know, two young kiddos just looking at the view as if it's just, you know, it's their home. It's completely normal to them. But it's about 700 meters away. It's literally not super far away. Like, I can see the buildings. To give you perspective, Gaza is like all of this strip. And also put a map so that you guys can understand. And then right there is just the ocean. See the sun sets where the ocean is. That's the ocean over there. And it's just a very strange feeling to know that just 700 meters away from here, there is a huge quarry. And this whole area has been war-stricken for months and years, honestly. So guys, I'm going to end the vlog here. It's been a very intense day. It's been very sad, very eye-opening. I feel like a changed person in a way. If you're new here, feel free to follow and subscribe, comment. If you're not new here, then thank you for watching and welcome back. And from Israel, in front of Gaza, I'm Yisrael Chai. See you guys in a vlog very soon.
One of the things I love how you do is it's all very natural and just flows so beautifully is not really the right word considering the context, but just how you ended that, your editing, and that's it was an important day. You and I didn't debrief afterward so much, but your video, wow. I mean, that alone was worth bringing you.
Oh, I'm thankful that I had the opportunity. It was really hard to edit. Like, I remember I kept taking breaks because I'm like, this is too much. Like, you have to search for the footage on purpose. And it was very hard. And that's actually the comment that I got from a lot of people, that some people said, like, I couldn't watch it because I don't watch these things anymore. But thank you for creating the video, because you know that when you are faced with it, your heart is definitely altered. And I feel like that's what happens to you after a day like that. You witness it all, and your heart is never the same.
So I actually don't, forget, I want to invite people watching, listening, to be in touch. I have, I've been going down to the Gaza border pretty consistently since November. It's changed a lot. We're still in war. I have a group going down this week, and then the following week, I think it is. And over Shabbat lunch this week, it came up with friends. Last night, it came up with friends who've never been. A, when you're coming, be in touch. And B, if you're not planning to come here, plan to come here. We need visitors. We need people to come, invest in the economy, and bear witness themselves even months after. Oriel, what else before we wrap up? What else? 2 weeks since we've been there, a week or so since you created or posted the video. What else do we need to know about this? About what happened? About your experience?
I think that people need to know that as much as 7 months have passed, or 8 months, I think, right by now, right? Or
yes, 8 months, almost.
Yeah, 8 months. We're still in it. You know, when you have an injury and it's, a one-time blow, then you have time to get it, fixed and tended to and wrapped, and you can go to physio and you can do all the things you need to do in order for your limb to, in order to function again. But if you look at October 7th as a wound in a body, it's a perpetual wound, because as we're in it, you're not able to heal, because it keeps getting worse and worse and worse in all these different ways. And I mean, we have, the bodies that were recovered in the last few days, some of the families, they, after 8 months, that they've been thinking that their family members are alive, and actually they probably died on October 7th.
Right.
Only now they can start beginning their grief process, because they had the anxiety of thinking their family member was still alive in Gaza. And so you can take that as a symbolism of what everyone is experiencing, that we're not given the opportunity to heal yet. So if there are people here of faith, I'm asking you to pray, because we need a lot of help, because hearts are broken and this country is still bleeding.
Yeah. Excellent. To be continued, possibly with you in front of the camera, but definitely with you behind the camera. And thanks for making time tonight. I know you haven't been feeling well this week, so I'm glad your voice is better.
Thank you.
I don't want to say we'll do this again. We should have good things.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, Oriel, thank you. And let me just wrap up. As people know who follow certainly the podcast and the audio recordings that we do, every month we have a special promotion, if you will, We want to encourage you to like and subscribe and share this. I think we're today as well, but we're sharing and creating some important content to build bridges between Jews and Christians. So since almost the beginning of our podcast, we've had an incentive called From Jonathan's Bookshelf. And all we ask is that you follow and like Inspiration from Zion and all the social media. And when you comment or share this, every month I pick one person at random to receive a copy of our spectacular book that came out just before the war began, Israel the Miracle. And actually our promotional videos that we've been doing all with Oriel's help. So I do want to encourage you to like, subscribe, and definitely comment and share this with other people who you know will find it of interest. We're always grateful that our podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. And if you're ever in the area, pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And thanks especially to the Coyne family for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider making a donation to help continue the dialogue and build bridges as we do. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue and invite you to send any questions as well, especially for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and please continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. And wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you. Hallelujah.